If farmers treated the risk of fire spread to all surrounding land the same way they treat the risk of fire spread to populated areas or national parks, fires might be reduced by up to 80%.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. We're getting used to watching images on the news of uncontrollable forest fires now. And in many parts of the world, these are the consequence of land clearing by farmers that's gone wrong. So which policies would work best to bring these fires under control and to make the firebugs responsible for the social and environmental costs of what they do? A new paper based on data from Indonesia produces detailed estimates of the extent of forest fires in that country and suggests why they get out of hand. It also suggests ways in which we can reduce both the number of the fires and the damage that they cause to property and to the environment. Ben Olken of MIT is one of the authors. Ben, welcome back to Vox Dev Talks.
Thanks so much. Nice to be here, Tim.
What sort of farmers in Indonesia are setting these fires? Where do they set them? Why do they set them?
In our paper, we examine forest fires throughout Indonesia, and we look at the fires that take place primarily in the national forest. So Indonesia has a vast system of national forests. Just to give some sense, it's twice the size of the U.S. national forest system, for example.
Oh, yes.
And we examine where the fires are starting. You can think of sort of the fires as occurring in forest land that has been leased out for different purposes. So there's logging plantations, which sort of grow trees, you know, for many years. Log them piecemeal over time. There's wood pulp and paper plantations, areas that are growing trees that are going to be used for wood fiber, and palm oil plantations, and there's protection areas and a variety of things. We find that the areas responsible for a disproportionate share of fires are the pulp and paper plantation areas and the areas zoned for oil palm concessions. So those are the two types of areas where we see the most fire ignition starting. There's a whole range of them, but you shouldn't think of this necessarily as one small farmer working by him or herself. You should think of a lot of these as larger corporate or large firms that are managing these concessions. I mean, it's a mix, but we primarily see them in those two types of forest zones.
So it sounds like these land clearing fires are pretty much business as usual. How common are they?
Our data covers the period from 2000 to 2016. And over the period that we study, we see about 107,000 unique fires. So that's quite a lot.
Yes. In your research, you want to find out where the fires that get out of control occur, but they're in places where it's not easy to gather data at the best of times. When there's a fire burning, it's not the best of times, is it? So how do you get that data?
Our research is entirely based on satellite data. We are working with a satellite called the MODIS satellite, which orbits the Earth multiple times per day. And other researchers have used the MODIS satellite to classify what are called hotspots. So areas where they see intense heat emerging, which are associated with fire. What we do in our paper is we link these hotspots over time to figure out where the fire most likely started and where it spread to. So for example, if you just see a hotspot, you say, oh, well, this pixel over here, this little area over here, it seems like there's something burning over here. But you don't know if it started over there or if it started nearby and kind of spread to that location. So what we do is we take all of these hotspots that we see every single day for 16 years, and we link them day by day by day by day. So if we see a hotspot in one place on one day, and you move over just a couple hundred meters the next day, or in a kilometer the next day, and you see a hot spot over there the next day, we're going to say it was most likely that the fire started in the first place and spread to the second place. So we use that linking of the hot spots over time to construct a notion of a individual fire with a place where it started and a place where it spread to. And that's the data that we use in the analysis. But fundamentally, this is all detected via satellites.
What factors are there that mean that a fire that started on one person's land spreads somewhere else where it's not meant to be?
As I think anyone who's dealt with fire might think is very intuitive, wind essentially can fan the flame, so to speak. So one thing that we focus on in particular is the degree to which starting fires on days that are very windy or that have high prevailing winds, we show empirically, actually, that fires that are started on those days are more likely to spread to nearby areas than fires that are started on calmer days. One thing I'll say that was actually a bit surprising to us in looking at the data is you might have thought that the direction of the wind would also influence the direction that the fire spreads.
Absolutely.
But that, it turns out, is much harder to predict in the data. And we consulted with a bunch of fire experts in writing this paper. And what they said is that, you know, that might be true if you were right down at the fire, but the convection currents are so complicated that what is the overarching prevailing wind in an area doesn't necessarily translate into which direction the wind is blowing at any particular moment down on the ground. So we focus in our paper on the wind velocity, essentially, the speed of the wind, not necessarily the direction of the wind.
How often does it happen that a fire spreads beyond the land that it should be on?
Let me also just say, by the way, when you say should be on, to be clear, starting fires for land clearing is illegal in this period. But I think what you also meant was, to what extent does fire spread beyond the area where it was started, where sort of where it was starting, maybe intended it to go? And the answer there is that most fires don't spread. So about 90% of fires don't spread beyond their initial ignition area. But the ones that do can become really large. So actually, about 30% of the total area burned by fires in our period is as the result of fire spread. Pretty substantial.
And is this because the people who are setting the fires, do they not understand the risks of burning? Or do they not know who owns the other land that it might spread to? Or they do know, perhaps, and they just don't care?
What we argue in our paper is that fire setting is an externality. Mm-hmm. Why are people doing this? They're doing it because fire is a very cheap way of clearing your land. Mm-hmm. So imagine that I want to convert my land from one use to another use. I cut down the trees and then I'm left with stumps and brush and things like that. I need to get rid of all that stuff before I plant whatever I want to plant there. One option is you can burn it. The other option is you can come in with a bulldozer, essentially, and use mechanical devices to clear it. And the basic issue is that fire is cheaper. It's a lot cheaper than bringing in all the bulldozers, whatever. So that's why they do it. I think that's the fundamental economic driver of this. Now, the externality is there's a chance that if I start a fire, it'll spread beyond the area I intended it to. If the area where it's going to spread to is my own land, then I'll take that risk into account. And maybe I'll say, no, it's a lot cheaper, but there's some risk. Maybe that was not that valuable. Maybe it's okay. But I'll make that choice myself as a person trying to make the decision. But if it's your land, if it's someone else's land, then I'm going to care about that less, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it burns into the sort of a public lands or a neighboring concession, I'm not going to internalize that the same way I would if it was my own land. And that disconnect between the risks I face of burning onto my own land versus the risks I face if a fire were to burn someone else's land, that's the thing we find in this paper is a substantially important driver of additional fire setting.
And what punishments at the moment are they? Because as you say, it's illegal, and I would imagine it would be even worse if they started burning, I don't know, government land.
Yeah.
So what punishments are there for the farmers who do this?
It's a great question. So for a long time, I think this behavior was not pretty substantially punished, although there were various efforts to rein things in. In the aftermath of the 2015 fires, which were fires which were, I think, one of the worst in many, many years, caused smoke that affected nearby countries, the Indonesian government substantially cracked down on people who they thought were associated with starting these fires. And they published a list of initials of all the different firms that they investigated as sort of fire starters. So we can use that to look in our data at what are the correlates of what seems to be associated with being punished by the government. The first and most important thing is larger fires are more likely to get punished or get investigated. That's number one. Beyond that, the government seems to pay particular attention to fires that quite reasonably, I would think, affect populated areas or national parks, wildlife diversity protected areas. Is those two types particularly trigger the government's attention?
As economists, one of the things that we learn about this, when there's an externality, then maybe it can be resolved by bargaining. Would it be resolved if we define property rights better and allow the farmers to work this out amongst themselves?
So it might be. I think that would do some of it. So I think that it would be the case that if farmers had well-defined property rights, potentially could sue each other and sort of say, you know, you set a fire on your land, it spread over and burned my land. If I could recover the damages from you, that would, we think, to some degree, reduce fire setting behavior, because then you would treat my land and the other land as the same. The thing we find would have a much larger effect, actually, would be enhanced government sanctions. If everyone treated the spread risks the same way they do already of the risk of a fire spreading to a national park or protected area, those are the kinds of areas the government cares about the most, we find that would have the most substantial impact on reducing fires. We call these Pigouvian tariffs or something, where the government is imposing the damages that you do to other people, and we think those might be particularly effective in reducing kind of this type of behavior.
I see. So it's Pigouvian rather than Coasean for this
one. Yeah, exactly. We see a strong argument for sort of the evidence suggests that people respond to these kinds of Pigouvian incentives, and that Coasean bargaining, at least as we're seeing it between farmers, at least as we see in the current world, isn't particularly effective. It might be the case that if you really set up the property rights properly and allow people to sue each other, then the Coasean stuff might be more effective too.
Forest fires, though they are used not just in Indonesia, they're used all over the world, aren't they, to clear land. Do you have any idea of how much environmental damage we could avoid if we use this stronger enforcement that you recommend?
We show that if farmers treated the risk of fire spread to all surrounding land the same way they treat the risk of fire spread to populated areas or national parks, the kind of areas where the government is most worried about those, fires might be reduced by up to 80% in our context. So that's a lot. Whether the same thing would be true in Brazil or in other contexts that have a lot of forest fires, I don't exactly know. But I think it does suggest that there's a lot of room for increased enforcement to reduce this type of activity.
A lot of room for improvement in something that really does need improving. Ben, thank you very much.
Terrific. Thanks so much, Tim.
The paper's called The Origins and Control of Forest Fires in the Tropics, and the authors are Claire Balboni, Robin Burgess, and Ben Olken. Well, thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, we're here every week, and you can always find all our past episodes at voxdev.org, or if you subscribe to Voxdev Talks, they're on your phone right now.